Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transform. Program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and it ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, doing great. Got to the middle of the week here and got an exciting show. So
we are skating and blowing smoke. Well, we've got a fun one tonight. I've called this show Until It's Yet. And I feel that I must provide an explanation for that title, because that's words you don't often hear. And so, guess what? It's an adorable kid's story, in addition to being a profound philosophical thing. So, the other day, my wife and two of my kids are putting shoes on and getting ready to go out. I think they were heading to school. And my daughter, my four-year-old daughter, reaches for the door. She's got her hand on the door, and my wife says, "No, we're not ready to go out yet, because still needs to put shoes on my son." And my four-year-old daughter says, "That's okay. I'll keep my hand here until it's yet."
So, I love it. You know, if we ever feel the need to change the name of the show, Phil, from World Transformed, that's the next title.
She grasps how quickly the future will be here, okay? She's a chip off the old block, I must say. I don't know when I've been prouder of one of my kids.
Well, how long are we going to do this show, Phil? Until it's yet.
Until it's yet. That's right.
Yeah.
We're just going to do it until it's yet, and then we'll move on and do something else. But that, you know, I was looking at these amazing developments that are occurring, and we've talked a lot about how AI is moving suddenly faster than anyone expected, but AI is not the only area where things are happening faster. The future is closing in fast, is the subtitle for those who maybe didn't pick up immediately on what "until it's yet" means. And I think we got some really awesome examples of stuff happening outside of the. I mean, we were already expecting the future to happen pretty fast, right, Stephen? We weren't exactly laggards about this, right?
We're kind of hip to the exponential future idea that things are happening faster and faster all the time.
But do you agree that it seems like some things are just even kind of outpacing those expectations?
Right. I mean, things can't, and that's the way it is. You know, sometimes the things that we think are right on the horizon take longer than we anticipate, and we get frustrated with that. And things that we hadn't, you know, not even on the radar, you know, show up. I mean, it's, the adjacent possible, the things that could happen that are right on our step, often we're blind even to that. And that's exciting.
Absolutely.
There's room for surprise.
Well, and let's start with this. 3D printers, not a big development. Hey, we all knew 3D printers. They're a real thing. It's a happening thing. And I think it was about a year ago I was talking about, not even a year, a few months back, I was talking about visiting a school where I was thinking about speaking to my kids, sending them for kindergarten, and how impressed I was that the computer lab at this kindergarten had a 3D printer. You know, how ubiquitous that technology has become, that it's not just in a few specialty science and technology high schools. You go to a good, solid kindergarten, and they're already making 3D printing possible. But now it's stepped even beyond that. This just shows up in my search results. I'm searching for something else, and hey, here's an ad for Glowforge, the iconic 3D laser printer. Make magical things at the push of a button. You read this ad, and congratulations, by the way, to the Glowforge people for their successful product rollout. You know, they did a crowdfunding model. They raised $28 million in 30 days, and now they've got a viable 3D laser printer product that goes for, I think they originally had listed it at about $4,000. They're now selling it for about $2,400. And I don't know, Stephen, if you've had a chance to look at the page and see some of the stuff you can do with this thing, but it's pretty darn cool. It's a pretty impressive piece of technology in terms of just the variety of things you can produce with this printer.
This looks like a different sort of 3D printer, Phil, than I've seen before. Usually, when I think of a 3D printer, I think of something that's adding some sort of plastic, layer by layer. This doesn't really work exactly like that. This is a little different.
Well, and they call it a laser printer, and it all comes down to that laser point. That laser point is going to be that's going to be where the incremental substance is being added. So it actually isn't all that different from the 3D printers that you've thought about or heard about before. But the ones we've seen up to this point have been more analogous to an inkjet.
What we've seen mostly before, you could call additive 3D printing, where it lays things down. This is something that takes something and then subtracts from it. Isn't that by and large what's happening? For example, you could take your laptop and put it inside this, and it would etch something into the laptop, a design perhaps that you want on the back of your laptop. That's one of the many things this thing could do.
Yeah, it definitely cuts, but it does both, right? You're printing, it is a laser controlled ability to cut into materials for sure. It provides that, and they show wonderful, beautiful examples of that. Things you can do with paper. These wonderfully cut out wedding invitations and things like that. But it also does add. So you can build stuff up and cut things down. Unless I've misunderstood the product completely, you know better than I,
Phil, on that. But I was just seeing. So yeah, so the laser part would be able to cut through, whatever you put into the printer. But and one of the things that shows at the top of the page is cutting through cardboard so that it can make, you could make various things out of cardboard. But that's obviously not all that it does. But yeah, it's very cool. And the prices of all 3D printing we've seen with computers over the years, you can do more and more for less and less money all the time. And this is just another example, I think.
It's a terrific example of capability that didn't exist at all a while back. Capability that existed only in the most kind of high-end and expensive shops a few years ago. And now people buy it for $2,400 and they can put it on their desktop. And this is very analogous to the laser printer. The original iteration of the laser printer, right, with the Macintosh back in the early mid '80s, right. The idea of this kind of capability on the desktop, I think, potentially is a game changer. And if I've misunderstood, and even if it only cuts, it's pretty amazing what you can do in terms of layering on the stuff that you've cut out with something like this. It's a very impressive. Well, I mean, the fact that they raised that much money in that period of time shows that I think there's a real market for something like this, and people are going to be doing a lot of this kind of stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, and our local Best Buy has several different 3D printers now that are reasonably priced. The Sam's Wholesale Warehouse Club here close by does as well. I think that this year may be the year that our family finally purchases one. I've been interested in having one for a long time, but, it was one of those things that, what you were able to do with them, the first iteration of these things, was rather limited and, of course, expensive to operate. But it seems like you're able to do more and more for less and less, and so I'm excited about this.
I think it's very telling that they dropped their price. Not only did they have this hugely successful crowdfunding campaign, but it's becoming closer and closer to a consumer type product, and I think we'll see a lot more with that. But you know what? That one was just kind of the add-on technology, because it showed up in my search results, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Let's talk about some of these other technologies that are coming on faster, or that can move us along faster than we ever would have thought. Photon propulsion, been much in the news lately, because there's been all this talk suddenly about interstellar probes. That's another one we could talk about completely on its own. Something that has only existed as pure speculation. We now have people talking in, I'm going to say, quasi-realistic, quasi-serious planning mode, talking about how they're going to send probes out into interstellar space. That's really just hit the wire in the last couple of weeks, hasn't it? But one of the driving technologies behind that is the idea of using photon propulsion. That's what they're talking about doing. We'll use a laser beam, and we can accelerate these probes to reasonably near the speed of light. Get a probe out to Alpha Centauri, and then start seeing exploring the universe basically. Well, here it is. We're talking about using it a little bit closer to home, and we've got NASA saying that they could—they've got a concept here for now propelling a 100-kilogram spacecraft to Mars in 3 days. And how long does it currently take to get to Mars?
Oh, it's a 9-month deal.
Actually,
I apologize. According to this article, significant time savings compared to NASA's current 6-month estimate.
6 months. But it can take longer than that. It depends on how the orbits are lining up, right? Because the way we typically get to Mars is you send a probe out into orbit around the sun. It's on an orbit trajectory from an orbit of Earth to an orbit, right? It's going to intersect with the orbit of Mars, and you just catch up with it when you catch up with it. If Mars is reasonably close when you leave, maybe you can do it in 6 months. If Mars is pretty far away, it's going to take even longer than this. Even longer than that. But in this model, forget that, right? This is like a line of sight, more or less, 3 days. It's like, there's Mars. I'm going to point my rocket at it and go, right? And because I'm shooting this photon beam at the probe, I'm able to vastly accelerate it in the direction of the red planet, and we can get there in 3 days. This is interesting.
It's 25% of the speed of light. 25% of the speed of light is how fast you can get these things going. My thought, Phil, is, would you just wave at Mars on your way by? Because you have to slow down too, right?
I wonder if the 3 days is inclusive of, a day and a half of speeding up, a day and a half of slowing down. I would say that at the speed of light, generally speaking, we can get a signal to and from Mars in about 20 minutes. Right.
Yeah, we're about 20 light minutes from Mars, which means if we send a signal and then wait for a response, it's a 40-minute round trip.
Yeah,
so
if there was no acceleration or deceleration involved, going 25% of the speed of light, by my math, you should be able to get there in about an hour and 20 minutes, something like that, right?
Exactly.
Obviously, the 3 days now, it seems to me, is very likely, including all the acceleration and deceleration. You're going to – and I don't know how you break.
Well, you'd have to have the same system that is propelling it from this end. You'd have to have in place at Mars to decelerate it,
pushing back on it. Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Some equivalent, something that could have the same kind of dampening effect. But I don't know what else it would be, unless you just you turn it around, and you basically you're going to fire retro photons at it to slow it down as it gets closer to Mars. What a great idea! So. You have to have one mission under your belt to wherever you're going if you want to decelerate, which is interesting. I haven't heard them talk about that in terms of getting to Alpha Centauri. Maybe in that instance, since you're going four light years,
what the thought is with Alpha Centauri is that you send out hundreds of little probes and you speed them up to 25% of the speed of light, and just, I mean, hundreds, maybe thousands of these things, you shoot them at Alpha Centauri, and then you wait for the signals to get back to you. Now, it's we're 4 light years to our closest star, Alpha Centauri, and so as these things basically fly by that the Alpha Centauri system, it wouldn't stop because you don't have anything there to catch it, right? And so you'd get, and it, as it flew through the system, it would be collecting all this information, all these different probes that you'd send. You make them cheap, and you make a whole bunch of them, and that they send the signal back to back to Earth, and we, of course, it would. 4 years after the flyby, there we would start seeing it back here on Earth. So,
but when you're flying by, are you going 25% of the speed of light?
Yeah, yeah. And so you would fly, and so you would quickly move through the system, and
yeah.
and be gone.
Don't blink. You're not going to have very long to look at. But I guess you start looking at it before you get there too.
And they're talking, so if it's, they're talking like it being a 20-year journey or something like that, and then 20 years, so it takes 20 years for all these probes to get there, and then they quickly move through the system, and then it takes 4 years more for us to learn what they sent back. So it's a quarter-century project, but how cool would that be, what we would learn? And of course, you got redundancy built into a project like that because you're sending hundreds, maybe thousands of these little probes, and that work together. So if you lose half of them, it still will be an amazing success.
And again, to swing it back to till it's yet, how fascinating that we're talking about this in more or less we could do this kind of terms, right? This is my whole life, any talk of interstellar probes has been, maybe someday, but probably not for centuries.
Yeah, it's sci-fi. That's all that was.
Yeah. And now we're talking about it in terms of, we could actually do this, and by golly, if some people aren't actually seriously thinking about doing it. And as space opens up, this technology, this photon propulsion, I think is going to be huge. As we start settling in space, as we start actually having tourism occur in space, as we actually start moving out into space to get resources, we've talked about mining the asteroids and some of those kinds of things. Getting around fast, that could make all the difference in terms of what we're able to do in space. And this is a good model for how that could happen. Moving a 100-kilogram probe is not the same as moving a freighter full of ore from the asteroids back to Earth. But, of course, there's no reason necessarily that that would have to go that fast. But the idea that those kinds of speeds could be achieved, that we understand how to make that happen, I don't know. I think that is amazing to me, both that they're figuring it out and that they're talking about it in such practical terms. I can't wait to hear what we hear about this next. I think it's going to be...
Think of the science fiction movie Total Recall, where he took a trip to Mars, and they asked him, "Well, how long do you intend to stay on Mars?" 2 weeks, right? Was the answer.
Right.
He was in that crazy disguise he was disguised as a woman. It turned out to be kind of creepy but cool.
Yeah.
2 weeks was the period of time that he chose to as a realistic, story about how long he would stay on Mars. Why in the world would you take a 9-month voyage to Mars or a 6-month voyage to Mars and then stay 2 weeks? You don't
right.
do that. You
right.
go, you would go to Mars and stay 2 weeks only if it took you a couple of days to get there and then maybe a couple of days to get back to
right.
Earth.
Yeah.
And so, this is an enabling technology to make the kind of Mars that we see in movies like Total Recall possible, except for maybe the blue sky on Mars thing. But,
Well, and not just that. I mean, to use an analogy, we traveled to Malaysia over the summer.
Yeah.
And ultimately, when you count all the layovers and airports and everything, that's about a 2-day trip.
It's not a small thing to go. So you're not going to go for, you know,
don't go to Malaysia for 2 days, right? It's like
right.
You go for a couple, 3 weeks because it takes 2 whole days to get there. But,
right.
You know, that's about as far.
You're not straightened out the jet lag for a day or two. You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. And Lord knows what kind of jet lag you'll be dealing with going from Earth to Mars. I mean, you know, that's a, that's a completely different thing. But, I mean, you know, the thing I've always said about getting to Malaysia from the U.S. is it's about as far as you can go. If you go any farther, you're practically on your way back. Right, I mean that's how far away it is. So Earth travel pretty much maxes out at about 2 days, and now we're talking about a time frame for getting to another planet that is at our current maximum for how long it takes to get somewhere on Earth. I think that's pretty amazing. That's just a pretty cool idea. And speaking of amazing,
hey, and just in case you thought our first story had nothing to do with this. 3D printing is an enabling technology that allows the space travel. I just want to throw that in.
Both the additive and the cutting kind, I'm sure.
Yeah, you got to have it. I mean, you got to be able to on site be able to produce the things that you need, and it's going to be a huge part of how we do things, both on the way and once we reach places like Mars.
Absolutely. Okay, moving quickly on here. Futurist Ray Kurzweil predicts solar industry dominance in 12 years. Trajectories are exponential. Now, this is something that's happening fast. This would be more surprising to me if we hadn't talked about it so much already. But we've been, you know, when Ray's been on the show a few years ago, and every time we hear about Ray, he's touting this message. I had not heard him say dominance in 12 years, but come to think of it, probably 8 years ago I heard him say in 20 years, and you know what? He's just staying true to it, right? The thing is, this is happening very fast. This is, and it's still under almost everybody's radar, even though Ray keeps saying it, and he's a very prominent guy, and he's a very prominent position. I don't think people grasp that that's possible, that in 12 years, solar could be our dominant source of energy. And all the, you know, I mean, hand-wringing that goes on about energy could become essentially moot in just a few years. Because we solved the problem. We ecologically and economically and any other eco way you want to look at it, and we're solving it right now while we're arguing and worrying about it, which is just
that's typically human.
Yeah.
It's just kind of we are wired to worry, and that's just kind of what we do. And we are problem solving animals, and what's the first step to solving a problem is finding one, and that's kind of what we do. We find problems, we worry about it, and then we end up seeking solutions. This is a solution that you and I feel probably won't be as surprised as the general public when it actually happens. That we don't really need the power from these dirty plants anymore. We produce all that we need from solar. And I think that will shock a lot of people.
I think, you know what, we're about 18 months out, maybe a couple, 3 years out tops, before there's just going to be this sudden, hey, solar is really coming on awareness. Right.
Right.
Where it's going to reach a point where people can't not see it anymore. They'll have to see it.
It'll be one of those things, Phil, that you'll be driving along and you'll realize, well, you know, it's been a little while since I passed a house without solar panels on it. You know, it'll be one of those things. You'll reach the point where, you know, it'll be the house without the solar panels will be the exception, you know.
Right.
And it might actually be that, you know, it's the wealthy. Right now it's the wealthy that have solar panels, right?
Right.
I think at some point there'll be a turnaround and it'll be the wealthy that, you know, I don't want those ugly things on my house, and they'll be the ones that can afford not to have, you know.
But I'll tell you what, you know what a house without solar panels will be like? It'll be like a house without Wi-Fi, or like a house without cable, okay? Right? I mean, those kinds of comparisons, right?
Yeah, the rich people that don't have solar panels on their house in the future will probably be purchasing solar from some sort of, you know, commercial solar provider, that's how, you know, by and large, I think a lot of this will be on the, you know, produced locally right there on your rooftop. And, you know, I think, a sizable portion of our solar, of our power will be done that way. And, you know, at the same time, as solar gets better and better and more efficient, we're also our batteries are getting better. So that right now, most solar is just, you know, connected straight into your system with no battery backup. So at night, you just don't get any power that way. If you're got a light on at night, that's coming from your local power company. I predict that most solar systems, home installed solar systems, will have battery backup in the future, so that you know, most of your power at night will be solar too. So
I think that's entirely possible. All right, with almost no time left, we've got to talk about this last story. Scientists identify new drug that slows the aging process and could dramatically increase our life expectancy. Now, Stephen, we talked about this before the show. I don't think we've talked about this on this show, and that just shows you how fast things are happening. That this story could have broken about a year ago, and we missed it, is astounding to me. Researchers at the Mayo Clinic, all right, have developed a cocktail of drugs that desenescizes, to some extent, senescent cells. It takes on senescence. Senolytics actually means destroying senescence. That's the idea. And to me, I mean, you talk about your out there ideas going mainstream. You know, this is the Mayo Clinic talking about doing the very thing that Aubrey de Grey talks about in his book, Ending Aging. And I just, there are no words, okay, for me to describe how exciting that is. That is, you know, a total, I mean, it should be a total validation and vindication for Aubrey, right, and for everyone who's talked to in terms of doing those kinds of things. But it's also just very exciting to see that that kind of research is going on and that they're making that kind of progress, isn't it?
Yeah. And, I mean, it's an ultimate problem, isn't it? It's, you know, we have a few problems that seem insurmountable, and one of them is the limited time we as individuals have. And if we can bump that out to where, you know, it's a chronic problem that we just deal with from time to time, we have to go in and get rejuvenated a little bit. That's, you know, that gives us time to solve all these other problems, doesn't it? Including get to Mars or you know, or whatever. It's it is an enabling technology for everything else.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, and it's just great news for those of us who aren't getting
it. It will allow us to live to see so much more, right? So,
and the other thing is, Stephen, if I'm not mistaken, didn't you say that we'd have our first real life extension treatment by 2015? And here it happened back in 2015, and we missed the story. So.
Well, actually, what I think I'd said is that we would have it was within 14 years of 2005. So that's still a couple of years from now.
Still a couple of years for that to happen, but boy, it's looking good. I got to say, Steve.
Yeah, it's looking like I might get this one right.
Yeah, your prediction is looking very good, and it's great news for all of us that work is occurring, and that progress is happening so fast that even you and I, even the guys from the Speculist, can't keep up with it. So we're going to do our best to continue to keep up with what's happening. But one more show to do this week, Stephen. We'll see if we can pack as much futuristic goodness into that as possible, I guess, huh?
Yep. See you on Friday. I'm back.
All right. Well, thank you all for being with us. And until it's live to see it.